to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm Jace. Thank you all for joining me. This is a new Comics Wednesday episode. And to start off, first of all, I have to apologize. This episode's actually coming out very, very, very late on Wednesday or extremely early on Thursday, depending on your time zone. And obviously, we want these new Comics Wednesday episodes to go out on Wednesday mornings before you get down to your local comic shop. So if there's any books that we recommend that sound interesting to you, you'll be able to pick them up. But unfortunately, some of the new computer components that I received for Christmas and installed weren't properly set up. And so even though I had recorded several podcasts with my new setup and had no issues, when I brought Manny on, it caused some problems. I won't bore you with the details, but it takes a second computer because of sound effects and music and all that, and not wanting to have an echo in order to have someone else join the podcast. And either I couldn't hear Manny, or he couldn't hear me, or he couldn't hear the music, and it was just a big mess. So we tried a quick and dirty setup that we tested and it seemed to work, and then started recording a podcast late Tuesday night, probably an hour and a half after our normal time that we would record. And we're just going to do a short, you know, Wednesday, New Comics Wednesday episode. But, you know, it's Manny and me, and we're talking comics, so we end up talking for, you know, over an hour. And then I go to edit the audio, and the only voice I hear is Manny. I can hear the music, and I can hear Manny. And every time I'm supposed to be talking, it's just dead air. So at that point, it was 1 o'clock in the morning. Super frustrated, super upset that the episode wasn't going to come out on time. So now I'm got everything squared away, got everything fixed, but unfortunately Manny is not able to join me tonight. But I do still have his audio from last night's recording. So what I'm going to do is toward the end of the episode, I'm going to put the clips of Manny's two books that he wanted to specifically mention at the end. Just keep in mind, if it seems a little choppy, it's probably because I was interjecting, and or, you know, we were having a conversation back and forth, and that's missing. So I apologize. It's so frustrating because it was such a great episode. Manny and I, you know, we had some good dialogue going, especially about Bloodshot and Ninjak versus the Valiant Universe. So it's super frustrating. And again, I apologize. I'm also going to try to put Manny's comments about Bloodshot Salvation number 5 and Ninjak versus the Valiant Universe number 1 at the end of my comments about those issues. Again, you're only going to hear one side of the conversation, so it may be a little confusing. But the reason I decided to go ahead and put that in, or I'm going to put it in when I edit the episode, is because Manny made some really good points, and I want that to, you know, to be out there for all of you listeners to hear. So let me get started with a rundown of some of the books I feel are worth mentioning that were released today, January 10th, 2018. And then I'll get more into depth on about, I think I have, let me check my notes here. See, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 issues that I want to get a little more in-depth on. And then Manny had 2 that he mentioned. And I should mention, originally I only had 4. But because this episode's coming out so much later, I had a chance to read a couple more things and decided to throw them in. And I'll get into more detail when I get to the issues in general. So books that come out today that I feel are worth mentioning, just about every title that Aftershock Comics puts out is worth mentioning. So Alters number 9, which I actually covered in the Aftershock Monday episode that came out earlier this week. Alstro Monstro Mechanica number 2, which is one of the books Manny is going to talk about. Pestilence number 6. And Jimmy's Bastards number 6 as well. I'm sorry, is that? Yeah, Jimmy's Bastards number 6. I had that listed as 5 for some reason. Yeah, it's number 6. Also, I want to mention Mech Cadet U number 5 from Boom. A few good DC Comics came out this week. Action Comics number 995, getting real close to 1,000. That's continuing the Booster Shot story arc. Also, I want to mention Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps number 36. That was really good. Harley Quinn has 2 issues that come out Harley Quinn number 34, and she also has a special called Harley Quinn, Be Careful What You Wish For, Special Edition number 1. And the reason I mention these books, even though I no longer read Harley, for me, the New 52 run, I lasted about 15 issues. And I think part of the reason I got burnt out on Harley is I did a Harley spotlight for the YouTube channel. And I think at that time, her New 52 series by Jimmy Palmiotti and Amanda Connor had been out a little over a year, critically acclaimed, selling like gangbusters. But in preparation of doing the YouTube spotlight, I read chronologically every single DC Universe appearance of Harley Quinn up to that point. And I kind of OD'd on Harley. And ever since then, I just really don't enjoy her as a character. And so even though I consider Jimmy and Amanda friends and the book is quality and has had great art from Chad Hardens and others, Paul Mounts and John Timms, it just hasn't been my cup of tea. But the reason I mention Harley Quinn number 34 and the Be Careful What You Wish For special is because these are the last two issues that Jimmy and Amanda are doing. They're leaving the book. They just feel like it's time for a fresh voice on Harley. And they're just stepping back to concentrate on some creator-owned stuff and just take a break. I really wouldn't be surprised to see them come back to the character at some point, though. So for all you Harley Quinn fans, you definitely want to go out and pick these books up. I'm not going to spoil anything for you, but I will just say there's a couple of really cool guest appearances. Also from DC, I want to mention Mr. Miracle number 6. That's one of the books Manny talks about as well. And Wildstorm Michael Kray number 4 also came out today. Over on the IDW side of the world, I'll mention G.I. Joe, Real American Hero number 246. I'm sorry, number 247. 246 has a second printing coming out. 247 is first released today, and that's continuing the story of this new female Snake Eyes. And what's really interesting and of note is that since her origin and appearance in the book, they've had to go to second prints for like 4 issues in a row. So if you're a fan of G.I. Joe, fan of Snake Eyes, there are a lot of people that want to get on board with this new Snake Eyes. So be sure you're pre-ordering or picking it up the day of. Otherwise, you may end up with a second print. From Image, a few things of note. We have Port of Earth number 3, which I'm actually going to be discussing on what normally would be tomorrow's episode, but it's going to come out the same day as this due to the technical difficulties, Top Cow Thursday. So Port of Earth number 3 by Zach Kaplan from Top Cow. Rose number 7 by Meredith Finch, which is a really great book. I'm hoping to have Meredith on soon, so stay tuned for that. And also Witchblade number 2. Which I'll be discussing on this week's Thursday Top Cow podcast as well. The Marvel side of the world, Avengers 675 came out, and also Old Man Hawkeye number 1. I think a lot of people were waiting for that one. And I think, you know, let me go back real fast to Avengers number 675. I think this starts that Avengers legendary tale or whatever it is. I can't remember the exact wording of it, but it's basically it's by Mark Waid. I'm trying to get the details for you, but for some reason it doesn't want to give me it's not giving me the details, so stand by. But I do believe Avengers 675 starts like a new Avengers storyline, and I want to say it's by Mark Waid, and it's basically going to be a weekly Avengers No Surrender is what it's called, and it's going to be a weekly story, and I want to say like 12 or 13 issues. Get some details here. Introduction, crossover, Earth plagued by natural disasters, blah, blah, blah. But anyway, it's Mark Waid, Jim Zub, and Al Ewing as the writers. And it's got a lenticular cover, and it's supposed to be a big deal. So, you know, if you're a big Marvel fan, certainly take note of that. Daredevil 597 by Charles Soule, always a great writer and his books are all worth picking up, getting close to 600. This continues the Wilson Fisk as mayor of New York storyline. I did mention Old Man Hawkeye already. I'm sure that's going to get a lot of people's attention. Phoenix Resurrection number 3, which is on my radar. It's a weekly title. It's the return of Jean Grey. I thought about trying to get caught up on it. I haven't read any of the issues. Thought about trying to get it caught up on the whole thing so I could talk about issue 3 for the podcast, but just didn't have time. Wanted to get to recording. Also, She-Hulk number 161, which I'm going to talk about more in a little bit. And X-Men Blue 19 and X-Men Gold Annual number 1. And the last publisher that I'll mention, Valiant, we have Bloodshot number 5, Bloodshot Salvation, that is, number 5, and Ninjak versus the Valiant Universe number 1. So those are just some of the titles I feel are worth taking a look at or making note of. And to go a little in-depth on a few of those, first book I'm going to talk about is Jimmy's Bastards number 6, written by Garth Ennis, art by... actually, it's co-created with art by Russ Braun, and colors are by John Kalish. So this is kind of a tongue-in-cheek take on James Bond, and it's kind of, if any of you are familiar with Garth Ennis's series The Boys, which I think originally started out as a Wildstorm title when Wildstorm was under the DC umbrella, or had just been under the DC umbrella, I think, and then got moved over to Dynamite. Really irreverent, really fun, interesting take on a superhero. So what Jimmy's Bastards is, it's kind of that same irreverent look at the world, I guess you'd say, or comics and characters, mixed with James Bond and spy kind of stuff. So it's really out there stuff, but it's so much fun. It's definitely for mature readers. It's not for the faint of heart. But if you're a fan of James Bond, if you're a fan of Garth Ennis, I mean, first of all, if you're a fan of Garth Ennis, you're probably picking this up. You know, it's not as out there and as vulgar and as gory or disturbing as something like his Crossed series. But it's you know, if you've read The Boys, as I said, it's probably the best thing to compare it to as far as the level of maturity you're going to need to read it. And, you know, there's... sexual innuendo, and there's violence, and there's just really weird, creepy, disturbing images, you know, mostly in the name of kind of toilet humor, I guess you'd say, but it's a whole heck of a lot of fun, and the co-creator Russ Braun, who handles the art, does such a great job of capturing the humor and the action and the cartoonish facial expressions. It's really, really done well, and the colors by John Kalish tend to be a little more on the primary side of things, but again, it definitely suits the book, gives it kind of that cartoony feel. I think if you're a fan of Adult Swim, things like Venture Brothers, Archer, the series, I think it comes on FX. This is probably right up your alley. You probably really, really enjoy it. So definitely check it out. It's an Aftershock title, so you know it's quality. Next book I want to mention in detail is Mech Cadet U, number 5, written by Greg Pak, art by Takeshi Miyazawa, and colors by Triona Farrell. So, I'm a big fan of Greg Pak. He's been on the show a few times. Loved his Kingsway West series from Dark Horse that came out last year. So this was definitely on my radar. I've never been a huge fan of like a Robotech or Gundam or any of those kind of things, but was willing to take a chance on this because it was Greg Pak. And I haven't been disappointed. I actually had only read the first issue until I completely got caught up so I could read issue 5 that came out today and talk about it for you guys. And this is completely an all-ages book. I totally think it would make a great bedtime story for kids from like 7 to like 12-ish. Not to say that adult readers can't get stuff out of it too. I thoroughly enjoy it. But if you're trying to get your kid to read and you're trying to get them interested in comics, I highly recommend this book. It's a whole heck of a lot of fun. Basically, the premise is every 4 years, these mechs from an unknown place land on Earth, and they choose kids, like, you know, 10 to 12 year old kids, and they kind of bond with them. The kids then train and learn how to use the mechs. And the mechs don't communicate, with normal language, and the kids certainly don't, they don't drive the mechs. You know, there's a place for them to sit inside the mechs, and the way it's described in the book is, think of the controls as kind of reins, you know, like you're riding a horse. You know, you don't have complete control, you can't make it do exactly what you want, but you can kind of guide it. And there's some aliens called Skargs that are these crab-like creatures, and I'm sure there's a lot more to the story that we haven't discovered yet. But that's the basic premise. It's a whole heck of a lot of fun. It's giant robots. So if you're into that, G-Force and Battle of the Planets and Robotech and Gundam and all that kind of stuff, I think you'll really get a lot out of this. It's really cool. The main character, Stanford Yu, definitely is a bit of an underdog, so we can all identify with that. And I know that Greg Pak wanted to make that one of the themes. So it's a fun book. There's action. There's a sense of danger, but at the same time, it's lighthearted and it's hopeful. Stanford Yu, even though he's kind of an underdog, is definitely a character that you kind of fall in love with and can't help but rooting for. So I give it a really high recommendation. It's definitely worth checking out. Next book I want to mention, Action Comics number 695, written by Dan Jurgens, pencils by Brett Booth, inks by Norm Ratman, and colors by Andrew Dollhouse. So that combo, Brett Booth, Norm Ratman, Andrew Dollhouse, that's what I consider kind of the dream team as far as art goes. They were on Flash toward the end of its new 52 run. Stunning, stunning work by Brett Booth. And then did a couple issues of Aquaman, I think, and then flipped over to Titans when the Rebirth Initiative started. As far as I know, this is the first time Brett Booth is working on Superman, and I have to say, as much as a huge fan I am of Brett Booth, I didn't necessarily enjoy his art in this issue on Superman, his rendering of Superman. He looked a little too lithe for me. He didn't look as you know, solid and as stocky as like my Superman to look. Panel layout's still great. Storytelling from panel to panel still great. I'm hoping that Brett's take on Superman, you know, after he's got a few issues under his belt, I'll enjoy it more. That being said, what Dan Jurgens is doing story-wise is absolutely incredible. I really feel like I get the tone ever since Jurgens returned to Superman with the Rebirth. I get the same tone as that classic Triangle era. And for those of you that are not familiar, the Triangle era was in the, I think the early to late 90s. And basically, there was one Superman title that came out every week, right? So you had your regular four monthly titles, Action Comics, Superman, Man of Steel, Adventures of Superman, and Superman. And every week, one of those titles would come out. And then every year, 4 months have an extra Wednesday. And so they had a quarterly book that came out to fill that gap, so you'd never have a missing week. That was Superman Man of Tomorrow. So basically what it boiled down to was 52 weeks a year, every year, every week, you had a Superman book that came out. And it told one continuous story. So, you know, January, first week of January, the first part of the story would be first part of the continuing story would be in Action Comics. And the next week would be, you know, the next part of the story in Adventure. And the next week would be in Superman. And the next week would be in Superman Man of Steel. And it went like that every week. So good and bad. Some people didn't like it because it meant you had to buy a Superman comic every week. Whereas others liked it because you got more, you know, you only had to wait a week to get the next part of the story. So Dan Jurgens, he's one of the main writers back then in that era, and he really was a driving force. And when you think about it, this Superman that's in the current Action Comics is, and just to quote Dan Jurgens, his Superman, right? It's that pre-Flashpoint Superman. It's that Superman that was married to Lois, and now they even have a son. So I definitely see that Jurgens has kind of returned to his roots and he's bringing back that same tone. And, you know, I've said before, like, as Superman goes, so goes the DC Universe. When I think when the Superman titles are high quality and they're selling well, the DC Universe as a whole seems to do well. And that's definitely the case here leading up to issue 1000. So some quick details on the issue itself. As I said, it's a team up with Booster Gold called Booster Shot. Basically, what's happened is it's kind of a direct sequel to the Mr. Oz storyline that happened in Action Comics just prior to this, the Oz Effect. Oz was a mysterious figure who's been hanging around for the last few years in the DC Universe, kind of spying on Superman, seemed to know a lot about him. His identity was revealed in the Oz Effect as the pre-Crisis on Infinite Earths Jor-El. Now, supposedly, he survived the explosion of Krypton. Superman doubts him, but since Oz disappeared at the end of the Oz Effect storyline, Superman could not ever definitively determine if it was really his father or not. So, in the Booster Shot story arc, he takes Flash's cosmic treadmill and uses it to travel back in time. He wants to go back to Krypton, the moment it exploded, and see if Jor-El really did escape. And that would give him more insight into whether or not this Mr. Oz character could possibly be his father. Booster Gold is tasked, along with Rick Hunter, by the Time Lords of protecting the time stream. So he follows Superman back into time because he wants to make sure Superman doesn't mess anything up. And as often happens in comics, things don't go the way that our protagonists want them to. And so between the Red Sun of Krypton and things not being what they're supposed to be and the time bubble being damaged, in this issue, Superman and Booster actually end up back in Booster's original time. And just real quick, Booster Gold, those of you not familiar, Michael John Carter was a disgraced football star working as a security guard in a museum that had things like Brainiac 5's force field belt, Legion of Superhero time bubble, Legion of Superhero flight ring, decided one night to steal them, travel back in time, and become a hero. So when they get to that future, Booster Gold's time era, where he originally was from, Michael John Carter, Booster Gold, is a wanted criminal, basically. And so this issue deals a lot with consequences of actions, relationships with parents and children, what it means to do the wrong thing for the right reasons, and the difference between justice and right and wrong. Because I don't think that those things are necessarily the same thing. You know, just because you do something wrong doesn't mean that, and don't get punished for it, doesn't mean that justice wasn't served. So it's a great issue. I'm a big fan of Booster Gold. You know, Dan Jurgens created the character, so it's always nice to see him get a chance to return to the Booster Gold character. So Action Comics 995. I have 695 down here for some reason, but it's 995. So I want to make sure that's clear. Because, as I said, it's leading up to the landmark issue, which is 1000, which is going to be coming up real soon. Next book I'm going to talk about is Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps, number 36, written by Robert Venditti, pencils by Jack Abair and Jose Luis, inks by Abair, Mick Gray, Cam Smith, and colors by Jason Wright. So I know that following Geoff Johns was a really, really tough task for Robert Venditti. In some ways, there's nothing he could have done right. So Robert Venditti following Geoff Johns, in some people's mind, that's a no-win situation. It, for some people who are huge fans of Geoff Johns, no matter what Venditti does, it's never going to be good enough. They're going to rake him over the coals. They're going to hate it. So I really feel like he hasn't gotten a fair shake in some people's eyes, but for the fact that he's been on Green Lantern for so long now, clearly he's doing something right. And from the time he stepped on, I've absolutely loved everything he's done. For a character that's been around so long, he's really brought a fresh take to it. And he's added to the mythos so many times with so many different things. You know, recently having Hal Jordan do something at the beginning of the Rebirth initiative that no Green Lantern's ever done before, proving that Hal is the greatest Green Lantern of all, and then playing off that and having that event matter and keep going back to it, and also mining things from the past, from Green Lantern mythos, bringing it back, making it fresh. It's been a nonstop roller coaster ride. I think it's one of the great runs of Green Lantern. It's, in my mind, it's right up there with what Geoff Johns has done with the character. And like I said, adding new things to the mythos, new toys for others to come and pick up later on. It's just incredible. And another thing I love about Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps in its current iteration, so New 52 launched, and it was, you had Green Lantern, you had Green Lantern New Guardians, you had Red Lanterns, and you had Green Lantern Corps. So you had to pick up four books in order to get the whole Green Lantern story. And now all those characters are here in Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps. You have Hal Jordan, you have John Stewart, you have Guy Gardner, you have Kyle Rayner, you have up till recently Soren Ignatiu and the Yellow Lanterns. We haven't seen too much of the Red Lanterns yet, I'll give you that. But St. Walker is here, Kilowog's here, Mogo's here. Larfleeze recently made an appearance. So I love that this is the book that you read and you get the cosmic story of the Lanterns and everything that's going on with this great set of characters. And the fact that Venditti gives all these characters, juggles all these characters and gives them all a chance to shine, and still has, with very limited space because he has to fit all these characters in, still gives everybody, you know, their chance in the spotlight and their time in the spotlight. Again, incredible job of writing, really an example of what a team book should be. So in this specific issue, Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps number 36, the Guardians, who Johns had kind of ushered off the stage, you know, Venditti brought them back here or there, but they were never the classic Guardians that we knew, the benevolent caretakers of the Green Lantern Corps. But Venditti's brought that back in this issue. We see the return of the classic red and white uniforms, and there's really some hope for the future. But he also brought back some classic Green Lantern villains who have ties to the Guardians, the Controllers, and everything that's been happening in this last story arc has been a little bit nostalgic, but again, fresh, and you can tell that there's a lot of stories there to mine. I'm not going to ruin it for you, but there's a scene in here with the Controllers and who they may bring back to fight against the Green Lantern Corps that has me really, really excited. So definitely recommend picking up Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps number 36. And actually, if you can, go back and pick up, I think, 33, 34, and 35. I think it's a four... I think it was four issues, this arc, Twilight of the Guardians, I think it was called. So definitely go and check that out. And I can probably verify that for you. Let me take a look at the cover really quickly. Yeah, Twilight of the Guardians is the name of the story arc. Next book I want to mention, She-Hulk number 161, written by Mariko Tamaka. And the art is handled by Janoi Lindsay, and colors by Federico Blee. So let me talk a little bit about the art first. I'm not sure what happened with Marvel. They do have some great artists like Mark Brooks and Mark Bagley. But for the most part, a lot of these titles, when I pick them up and try to get caught up, they're just, man, I've never heard of them before. I just... You know, and last year we had one of the executives there say, you know, it's not worth it to, you know, pay these name artists because they don't move the needle and this and that. And it's like, well, man, you're not even trying. And it's not to say the art is horrible, but it's not particularly good either. You know, I'm sorry. I don't want to, you know, rake anyone over the coals, and I don't like talking negatively about books, but it's just so uneven and so inconsistent. And I should say that, so She-Hulk number 161, when Marvel did another one of their reboots, I don't even know which one it was anymore recently, but it was whichever one they did after Civil War II, when Bruce Banner Hulk was killed. Sorry, spoiler alert. And Jen Walters fought Thanos and almost died herself. And then this story kind of picks up where that takes off, where that leaves off. But the title was called Hulk, number one. But it wasn't the Hulk everyone knew. The Green Hulk, and it wasn't. There was another Hulk title that spun out of that as well, Totally Awesome Hulk, which was Amadeus Cho. Green Hulk, totally different series. This was just Hulk. And it was Jennifer Walters, but when she did finally turn into the Hulk, because that took a few issues, she was no longer She-Hulk. And for those of you familiar with She-Hulk, Jen Walters, Bruce Banner's cousin, blood transfusion from Banner, became super-powered and green and voluptuous and tall and still was a lawyer and just always stayed in her Hulk persona because, unlike her cousin, she was able to retain her intelligence and her personality and everything. She was kind of mousy before. And then, you know, having all this power really made her a confident character, made her kind of unique in the superhero universe of Marvel. She didn't have a secret identity, none of that, right? So that all changed with her near-death experience at the hands of Thanos. Now she can still kind of control it, but she's decided she's just not going to be the Hulk anymore. But when she does finally change, she's gray. It's more rage. She's much more similar to the Hulk that her cousin was. You know, the out of control. And it's not clear if she gets stronger the angrier she gets. But it's definitely a different take on the Hulk. And so actually, I heard nothing but good things. Been wanting to read it for a while. Had the stack of books. Decided, okay, I want to talk about She-Hulk 161. Because when Marvel did their legacy reboot or relaunch or whatever, I don't even know. They changed the Hulk title from Hulk to She-Hulk, but went with legacy numbering, apparently adding up all the previous She-Hulk titles. I know it gets really confusing. Just stick with me here. And so they started with 159 and then 160, 161. And actually, this title is canceled with 163. So there's just two more issues that are coming out. And overall, it's an interesting series. The writer, Mariko Tamaki, has done a good job. But in a little bit of a way, I feel like this is a story that's been told before by Peter David. For those of you that grew up in the 80s and 90s, you'll remember that classic neon green cover of Hulk 377, where Doc Samson finally succeeded in merging all the different personalities of the Hulk together, and it was basically like a She-Hulk version of the Hulk, the Bruce Banner. You know, it was Bruce Banner with his intelligence, but confidence and the power of the Hulk, and it seems like with all Jen's doubts and everything that's going on, and you know. It just seems like it's a very similar story to that. Not to say it's not interesting, but it just doesn't necessarily feel very original. And I kind of liked it more like when it first started out, like the first six or seven issues, when it was really more about like Jen Walters just as a person. I don't know. I found that super interesting. And then when she started hulking out more and more, I found it less so. And it just got a little cliche. And specifically, I think it's issue 11 where she goes on a date and her and Hellcat break the fourth wall and the art's terrible. It was just, I struggled to get through that issue. And it felt so different from any previous issue that I stopped like three or four pages in and I went back and checked to see if it was the same writer, and it wasn't. It really surprised me. Cause before that it had been relatively good. Luckily with 159, the leader comes in, and it's a little more interesting again. It's a little more introspective, a little more meat there to make you think. Again, still felt it was a little cliched. And at the end of this issue 161, Jen goes to seek help from like a psychiatrist type therapist person. So again, there's that similarity with that storyline Peter David did way back when. And it wouldn't surprise me at all if at the end of these next two issues, when the series ends, if we see that it's a merging of this version of She-Hulk with the previous version. So it's not to say it's not worth reading. I think it's good, but it's lost a little bit of the charm that She-Hulk has. I think that I enjoyed the most recent She-Hulk series by Charles Soule more. It managed to maintain the charm. I didn't care for the art in there, that one either. Javier Peludo, I believe, did the art, and it was just too blocky and stiff for my taste. This is not blocky and stiff, but it's also not very clean. And there's been multiple artists on the title, and some issues have had two artists on the same issue, and that got really bad. I think that might have been 9 or 10, where the art looks so drastically different from page to page. Again, it pulled me out of the story. So I guess I give a recommendation for this if you're a fan of She-Hulk. But it's not a real strong recommendation. I definitely wouldn't seek out the individual issues. Either pick them up digitally, you know, if you have a Marvel Unlimited subscription and you're not, you know, paying extra 6 months down the line, I definitely think it's worth reading there. Otherwise, if you read digitally, wait for them to go on sale at 99 cents or pick up the trade. I certainly wouldn't go out and especially now with only two issues left, I don't know that it's worth a $4 cover price. So still a She-Hulk fan, and I'm hoping for a return of the classic She-Hulk. All right, next title I'm going to talk about is Bloodshot Salvation number 5, written by Jeff Lemire, art by Miko Suyan and Luis La Rosa, and colors by Diego Rodriguez. This is where it really hurts that we lost the previous recording, because Manny and I went on and on about Bloodshot and the Vin Diesel rumors and just how amazing Jeff Lemire has done writing Bloodshot, how he took, you know, Dwayne Straczynski, he's the one that started kind of the reboot, the relaunch of Valiant, started the Bloodshot storyline, and he built on what was there before and gave it a real feel of a lone guy on the run. Speaking of the Hulk, in a way it reminded me a little bit of the Bill Bixby Incredible Hulk series. That tone didn't, in my opinion, last long enough. I would have liked it if it lasted a little longer before we started making discoveries and uncovering the mystery. But when Lemire took over with Bloodshot Reborn, which was, again, not to plug our own shows, but was covered on last Sunday's Valiant Sunday podcast, he really took it up to the next level. And I feel like with Bloodshot Salvation, we're going up another level again. The art is absolutely stunning. Again, both Miko Suyan and Luis Rosa worked on Bloodshot Reborn. And if I have any nitpick about it, Bloodshot Reborn, it was 18 issues, 19 or 20 if you count the zero issue and the annual. But really, I'm talking about the 1 through 18. And I really feel like that should have been 12 issues. That's how much story there was. And the reason I feel like it was stretched out a little bit is because of the art. Now, don't get me wrong. The art's beautiful. I love it. Absolutely amazing. And it deserves the big panels and the splash pages. But when you do that, you lose progression of story, and the story ends up becoming a little more decompressed because you're just not getting as much of the story in each issue because there's not as much real estate because there's not as many panels. So I'm fine with that, mostly because I just set it down, I think, after the third or fourth issue of Bloodshot Reborn and waited until it was pretty much done and then got to binge it all at once. So I feel like kind of the same way with Bloodshot Salvation. There's kind of two storylines going on. There's the older storyline where Bloodshot has had a child with Magic, who he is one of the characters he met in Bloodshot Reborn, and they're now a couple. And there's the storyline where she's a baby and she's got something wrong with her, and Bloodshot meanwhile is out trying to protect his family by proactively defeating some threats to his family, or people that he feels can become threats to his family. And then there's also the storyline that takes place years and years later, where the daughter's grown up, 10 or 12, let's say. And I love that there's these two parallel storylines going on, because it gives depth to the story. And so Luis La Rosa does one of the storylines for art, and Miko Sunyan does the other. And just like with Wonder Woman, when that title relaunched with DC Rebirth, and there was two storylines, you had Rucka and Liam Sharp doing the storyline in the future, or the newer storyline, and you had the amazing Nicola Scott and Greg Rucka doing kind of the origin of Wonder Woman in the past. And I didn't know which one I wanted more, right? Like, I'd read whatever storyline it was. I'd read that issue. Let's say it was the Nicola Scott, Greg Rucka. I'd read that, and then I'd want the next issue to be more Nicola and Greg Rucka, because I'd be invested in that story and be hooked and want more of that. But then the next issue would come out, and it would be Liam Sharp and Greg Rucka. And then I would read that, and I would want that for the next issue, because I was invested in that storyline. Kind of the same way here. Like, if I had to choose between learning the answers to one or the other, I really don't know what I would choose. They're both really that good. And Lemire weaves them seamlessly together. And as I said, the art's, it's incredible to look at. So much detail. The color work by Diego Rodriguez is top-notch. There's nothing bad I can say. I mean, it's a solid 9, if not a 10. It's so, so, so good. Maybe I can't give this issue a complete 10 because it poses more questions and doesn't give us more answers. It's still building. We're still on the way up. But man, I think when Bloodshot Salvation, like an omnibus of Bloodshot Salvation, or really an omnibus of Lemire's whole run, starting with Bloodshot Reborn and Bloodshot USA and Bloodshot Salvation, easily could rate a 10. So, so, so good. And again, that's why I'm disappointed that Manny's not here and you didn't get to hear us our back and forth about it last night. So I am going to put Manny's comments about Bloodshot Salvation after. I'm just going to insert them. And so again, if it seems kind of choppy, doesn't quite make sense what he's saying, it's probably because he's responding to something that I said. So,
well, you know, I love it. And it's so complex because of the fact that it's telling two stories at the same time. But what puts my mind at ease, and it's something that you also know, talking to Jeff, is that he plans his books not by necessarily one story arc, but I mean, he's thinking 20, 25 issues ahead. So, as I read it, and as we get these awesome cliffhangers at the end of issues, or these awesome moments, I'm kind of, my gears are turning, trying to figure out, man, what does he have? What is he thinking? Where is he taking us? Where is he leading us? Because you know that, you know, it's a journey that he's already planned. It's not like he's worried about getting cut off at a certain point. It's a process of that he's making us go through with the fantastic story. And I mean, what you did was probably one of the best ideas, is to go back and take a look at how far we've gone to even further appreciate more the kind of storytelling that he gives us, alongside obviously the amazing art that has gone with it. So it's great, because I would have never thought that you can fit like Punk Mamba into a Bloodshot book, but they did, and it works. There's a reason for it. So I think it's fantastic. And just the way that he was able to take a situation that seemed pretty simple, going to see Magic's daddy, which I kind of have an issue calling him that, and then turning it on its head and making it that much more complicated, was great. So it's a great book. Bloodshot Salvation is definitely always at the top of my list. And I look forward to the next, because I want to know what the heck is he doing in the future. I want to know, you know, what's going to happen to his daughter. You're right. I want to know so much, but the thing is that he spread it out so far that we have to kind of be patient with it. I mean, if you really think about like the progression of Bloodshot, if you think about the Bloodshot character that kind of why I picked up and I had to go back when he was forced to team up with Archer and Armstrong, back when it's Bloodshot in the HARD core, the hardcore, and then think about the Bloodshot we have now, it's night and day, and it all stemmed from, when Jeff Lemire picked it up during the Valiant and what happened with the Geomancer and how he had in you kind of found his humanity back in Bloodshot Reborn, and then the progression from that. And then kind of what I was thinking about today too was, man, who would have thought that girl he found, in that junkie's house, who was possessed by nanites, would end up being such an important character. I could have sworn that magic was either going to run away, there's going to be a tragic death, something. It just did not seem like she was going to be the type of character to stick around, especially with the reunion that Bloodshot had with Kay and Bloodshot USA. I mean, and now we're at the point where they were, happily doing the house, playing house, kind of, where they had their own place, they had the dog, and they had the baby, and then it all falls down, and then it all falls down again. It's just such good storytelling, and it's great to look back, because it's not confusing. It's all streamlined. It's all been planned out so well. So, I mean, we can't help it, but, just continue to trust in his writing, because it's going to lead up to something good. It's just that, you kind of think about it, like, how much more can you really give us? Because that's great stuff.
Next book I'm going to talk about is also from Valiant, Ninjak versus the Valiant Universe #1, written by Elliot Rahal, art by Joe Bennett, with Bellardino Bravo, and colors by Ulysses Areola. Again, we went through all of this last night about what exactly Ninjak versus the Valiant Universe is. It's a web series. I think it's going to be on YouTube. A lot of great actors, people people from the Arrow that have been in the Arrow Universe TV shows, Jason David Frank from the Power Rangers show, some former WWE wrestlers. And basically, and this is all explained in the beginning of the issue, there's a letter from publisher Fred Pierce, coolest man in comics, super nice guy. Love playing poker with him every year at the Valiant Poker Party. But he basically explains this in the letter about how Valiant was looking for a totally different venue to reach new fans, something that could use their characters but wasn't beholden to continuity, and they could just tell a story and have it be a good story and do things that were different. And they've totally done that. I'm not 100% sure when the web series is going to come out, but based on the fact that this, I think it's a 4-issue limited series, Ninjak versus the Valiant Universe, is kind of a prequel to the web series, digital web series, I would say it's going to be coming out pretty soon. So one thing that's interesting is the fact that, I mean, just based on Ninjak versus the Valiant Universe, Ninjak's supposed to be a hero. And in this issue, we see him fight against some of the other heroes, and that's the same thing we're going to see in the web series. So again, it's not beholden to the continuity that's going on in the comics or any future continuity for the Valiant movie universe or TV universe, if there ever is a TV universe, because clearly Ninjak wouldn't be fighting against the other heroes, not without some crazy explanation. There is an explanation in the book. It's a bit of a trope, bit of a cliche. That was disappointing. The art was not, and the action was not. I was very impressed with the art by Joe Bennett. And it's also cool to see, right? I mean, most of the time, when I've thought about Valiant Heroes going up against Valiant Heroes, it's been because I was on a thread on the Valiant Fans Forum, and we were talking about who would beat who. I'm a big Bloodshot fan. I'm a huge Ninjak fan, and I really think Ninjak's up there, and he really kind of proves it in this book. Some other people will tell you Exo Manowar with that powerful weapon, most powerful weapon in the Valiant Universe, would win. Others will give a nod to Gilead, the Eternal Warrior, just because they think he's been around so long and knows every different dirty trick and fighting style there is. That's totally up for debate, but for me, watching Ninjak kind of put the other heroes to their paces was really fun, really enjoyable. So I think the digital series is going to be amazing. I think the Bloodshot movie is going to be amazing. Not 100% sure sold on Vin Diesel, but I think he's a better choice than Jared Leto. So I think you'll enjoy. If you're not familiar with Valiant, man, they put out some really, really great titles. Go check them out. I think you'll enjoy the digital series. So, and I'm sure they'll kind of, as I said, this four-issue series is a prequel to that. I'm sure in the digital series, they'll kind of recap what's happening and you'll be able to kind of catch on. But if you want to get more out of it, I definitely recommend going and picking up these four issues. So go and check those out. I'm going to, again, put Manny's comments about Ninjak and the Valiant Universe. I'm going to insert them here. Again, sorry for the choppiness. Some things don't quite make sense.
What I really liked was the letter in the beginning from the publisher, just kind of setting it up of what they're trying to do. So as a fan of Valiant, I can appreciate the fact that they're kind of staying a little safe with the story, kind of keeping it a little cliche, because the entire purpose of this is really to introduce new fans to the Valiant Universe. And I think it's a fantastic idea to mix a very popular YouTube videos with a comic book, because it's a way to, like they say in the letter, bridge that gap. And it's pretty cool. I would have liked them to see a little something a little different, but because I was really excited about this, and I was explaining it to a friend of mine. She likes to read comics, and Valiant for now, I'm changing that, obviously, is not necessarily on her coffee table. So I was explaining to her who Ninjak was, and I was like, to kind of simplify it, he's kind of like a ninja version of James Bond. and if you wanted to compare characters from one universe to another, he's kind of the Valiant Universe Batman, I guess I would say. So he has all the gadgets. He's the millionaire. He kind of has that vibe. So, but then kind of explaining the character a little bit more, and even sharing the trailer, the teaser trailer for the series, it kind of got her a little bit more on board. But with that, we're going to be able to see a lot of the other characters. We know that Jason David Frank's playing Bloodshot. And then Michael Rowe obviously is playing, Ninjak, which a lot of people are going to, recognize from Arrow. There's a lot of recognizable people, celebrities in it that will allow people to get maybe a little bit more vested into it. And hopefully, we cross our fingers that it will also invest them in the characters, because you're going to want to learn more about Bloodshot. You're going to want to learn more about Archer and Armstrong, one of the funnest books in Valiant, which, the only one that I think could rival is going to be, Quantum and Woody as far as being fun. but characters like Livewire, who has some awesome abilities, but I think is always underrated just because it doesn't seem as important. Eternal Warrior is another one of them. So, it's a great starting point. It's a great way to, it's a great new idea to try and bring in fans. Especially because of all the great things they're going to be doing going forward with their 5-film deal with Sony. And then, you know, their deal right here with, Bat in the Sun. So, a lot of, you know, since it all started in 2012 with their reboot and just telling really, really good stories with really good quality art. And now look at what they're doing. So. Obviously, Dinesh, Warren, and the rest of the crew, they're definitely doing something right. They definitely have the right formula. And I'm excited for this entire project. Hopefully we get the web series soon. I mean, if we have the book coming out, the web series can't be too far behind.
All right. Hope you enjoyed what Manny had to say about Ninjak and the Valiant Universe. At this point in the podcast, I'm going to insert Manny's comments about Mr. Miracle, written by Tom King and Mitch Gerrits. And following that immediately, I'm going to insert his comments about Monstro Mechanica number 2 from Aftershock, written by Paul Ellor with art by Chris Ebenheis and colors by Jean Awayers. I had a few things to say about each of the titles, but again, it's out there in the ether because it didn't get recorded properly. So I'm not caught up on Mr. Miracle 6. I'm enjoying Monstro Mechanica. And I'll just leave it at that for now. So let me go ahead and insert those comments for you.
Okay, so it should come with no surprise that the number one book I'm looking forward to is Mr. Miracle number 6, because it's a fantastic issue. I mean, with the dialogue between Barda and Scott throughout the issue, and with what's going on, I mean, they're going through trap after trap after trap, all while talking about just regular things that anybody and their spouse would argue about the whole time. And it makes it seem so normal for them that they're, you know, trying to escape a vat of acid, or trying to escape a hall of lasers, or a shrinking room, or guards, or, I mean, just, it's done so well. And every one of, I'm trying to go back and make sure that I'm not lying or anything, but the entire book is done in, 9-panel grids. The awesome part about it is that some of these grids, like, some of them are single images and some of them are like connecting images, and like they're just done really, really well. I mean, my hat off to Mitch Gerards, because I mean, his style is kind of, I guess, hopefully I don't offend him or anything, a little dirty, but it works. And I'm not too much of a fan, but it's worked so well in this book. And then, I mean, just the top selling point in this book is there's this awesome cliffhanger at the end, but the expression on Scott's face, I mean, it has done so well. I've never, you know, you can tell the emotion that's on his face, clearly. No words are necessary. And it just sets up the next issue so well. And then also you find out exactly why they're having, the conversations that they are throughout the issue. It's a great moment that's cut short by what happens next. But I'm not going to spoil it for you, because it's something that you need to enjoy. The other recommendation I'll make for this book is go back and pick up, if you really like this book, go back and pick up Jack Kirby's original run on Mr. Miracle, because there's a lot of Easter eggs that you're like, oh my god, like, because I started reading this series, obviously. And I picked up the trade that was DC released with all of the issues together. And as I read both of them, I was like, oh my god, this is here and this is there. And that's who that is. And it's really great to see how much work was put into it, and how much thought besides the actual story, how much homage to the past that they have. So this is a must read for this week. The other book I wanted to mention was one you turned me on to today, actually. Aftershocks, Monstro Mecanica by Paul Alor. And then the artwork is by Chris Evenhouse. Is that how you pronounce it? Okay. Well, both of them are co-creators of the book. I'm not even going to try to pronounce the colorist name. So it's on its second issue. It's from Aftershock. And, it's something a little bit different that I've, cause, you know, we're reading tons and tons of books. So this one's Aftershock. Here's what I love about Aftershock. Let me just point this out, is that Aftershock has all their titles are so different than everything else that's going on at, like, DC, Valiant, Marvel. And I love that. I love the fact that I can turn to them and they always have two or three titles that I can get into that are just, sometimes even off the wall. I mean, just different than everything else. And they always have, like, just great talent that goes over and writes books through them. So this one in particular is about Leonardo da Vinci. It's about him and some of his inventions. Specifically, did you get a chance to read the second one? Does it give you like some weird Italian ancient Tony Stark feel? Because that's kind of what I was thinking as I'm reading it. I was like, oh my god! I was like, Leonardo da Vinci might as well be Tony Stark of the inventor, weapons. I was like, wow, that's interesting. So I find it really interesting because Leonardo da Vinci is a great historical figure with obviously really really amazing inventions. And some of them were mechanical inventions that were meant for war. So it's really cool to see it now in a comic book form with a different perspective from his apprentice Isabel and you know, the troubles that they're getting into. Issue 2 has Isabel going on a mission into a town that's going to be under siege. The whole key of this is that, Leonardo has invented a machine, kind of like, I guess you can say a robot sort of, and it seems to be learning. It seems to have a way to, program it, which, to be honest, most of the book I love. But the fact that I don't understand how the machine works, how it works, really bothers me because it kind of takes me out of the era. Like, I'm not sure if I'm on board with how interactive, a robot would be in that time period. The rest of it is great though. Hopefully in the next issue or two, they make a little bit of an explanation of how that machine works, and I think I'll be satisfied with it wherever they decide to do. But for right now, because it's so vague, it bothers me and it kind of takes me out of the story a little bit because for now it really seems out of place.
All right, everybody. Hope you enjoyed what Manny had to say about those two titles. And once again, I want to thank everybody for joining us. Please visit us at thecomicsourceblog.com for all past episodes of the podcast. You can also check out episodes of our YouTube channel there and our famous sketch gallery as well. Follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Also do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to keep up to date on new episodes and convention coverage. And don't forget about our exclusive podcast in partnership with LRM Online, the 9-panel grid. You can go to LRM Online to enjoy new episodes every Tuesday covering a wide variety of topics. And all the content from The Comic Source is going to be moving over to LRM Online very, very soon. So be sure and pay attention to Twitter and Facebook and all that stuff. Listen to the podcast. I'll be talking about it when the shift finally officially takes place. And then you'll basically just be heading to the Comic Source page over at LRM Online to get all the new content. So thanks for joining me, everybody, and we'll talk to you next time.